Hi guys, my name is Russell Statz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables group. I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 17th. That's what it was. I wasn't doing too well at the time. January 17th, 1981, and I'm grateful to God and to AA and to a lot of great sponsors and to people like you. It's a privilege to be here. I absolutely enjoy coming up to this group. It's a very enthusiastic group. And, you know, I was thinking the other day, I think it's this is like the oldest, they say it's the oldest group. Is it the oldest group? Oldest step group in Broward County? But I'm thinking it's close to 62 years old. It's got to be up there with the oldest group, you know, possibly in South Florida, if not Florida.
It's safe to say the step group.
Step group, yeah. Of course. I don't want to get some guy in Jacksonville all pissed off at me. Some guy with 60 years might have a drink because I said that or something. We're going to talk about step six. I like talking about step six and seven. My problem is I always want to jump ahead to seven because seven's my favorite step because it has to do with suffering. And I like telling... And I actually like explaining to newcomers how they're going to suffer terribly. I had to go through it. I just like to see their faces when I tell them about it. You know, but we're going to sort of try to stick on step six. Now, I'm going to try to stick to my standard script. I'll talk about step three for the first 50 minutes. That's what somebody told me. And then I do the step the last 5 minutes. We'll try to figure out how that's all about. We'll try to... But it's just an aim. I mean, it's not like we're invading Iraq or something like that. Everybody will probably be okay at the end of it. I got an email. You know what's great about these meetings? You don't really have to... the truth is, I tried to actually prepare today. I wrote something on the computer and everything, but then when I went to get it, I accidentally erased everything. So, obviously, God was looking out for you guys. I hate when guys come up, you know, with long... You know, don't you hate that when a guy wants to tell his story? Have you ever seen this when a guy says, I want to tell my story, and he gets up there... And he's got it all written out, you know, he's going to read it to you, something like that, and snatch those notes away. So I much prefer to do it this way. That way I don't have to get involved in it. We can just see what the Holy Spirit does in this deal. And I just want, but you know, the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is if you become transparent, somebody once told me the only thing you need to do to give a good AA talk is to be sincere. And once you learn how to fake that, you got it made. But I was coming over here, I got an email. You know, I'm all plugged into all the stuff, Facebook, and I got an email. You can't make this stuff up. You cannot make this stuff up. You don't have to prepare. Just talk about your life. You know what I mean? I mean, I can just tell you stuff. That's what I like to tell. Our stories disclose in the general way we use. It's our stories. We all have unique stories. The problem is most of us don't even know what our stories are. I mean, I've spent 30 years trying to figure out what my story is, and I'm close, you know what I mean? But I still got some more time. What happens is we come in here, and slowly but surely we start understanding what our story is and who we are and what we are and what our deal is. And it's pretty good. It's a pretty good thing. We're kind of confused when we come in here. But I got an email 5 minutes before we're driving over here, and I get an email from somebody I barely remember. I sort of recognize the last name. And this is the only thing the email says. It says, you were right. It's from a gal. She says, you were right. You were right. I am codependent. And I recognize that this is a gal I think I met one time or something like that. I spoke to her about her husband 7 years ago. 7 years ago. I haven't spoken to her since, and she sent me an email and I said, you were right. I am codependent. That's for Ben, who's in the audience now. That's for all those guys who keep on telling me I don't understand. You just hang around long enough, you know what I mean? And don't get drunk, and they all come back, and they say something like, well, you know something? You were right. It's all about getting a new perspective, isn't it? You know, you're told something, somebody tells you years ago, you got a drinking problem, you say, go screw yourself, you know what I mean? And next thing you know, you're in Alcoholics Anonymous picking up medallions, you know, and they were right. I mean, we're the last ones to know, right? The alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. So, you know, watch out when you hear people talk from the podium and they say stuff, and you say, well, now that guy's pretty much as full of crap. You know what I mean? Because, you know, hey, maybe I'm right. Maybe that's the deal. Maybe the fact that you're not seeing that is the one thing that's holding you back from the real deal. You know, maybe you won't get the real deal, the treasure, until you get past that deal. Maybe I'm not right. Maybe I'm not wrong. Maybe I do understand. You know, because, you know, one of the things about having almost 30 years is that you have the experience. And with a man, you know, I hate to say that. Well, I don't hate to say it because it's the truth. You know, I was a scholar. I was a guy with, you've heard the story. I told my sponsor about all my, I've got a doctorate. I told my sponsor about all my degrees on the wall. My sponsor, who never graduated high school, he looked at me and said, you know, Russ, rectal thermometers have degrees. You know what they do with those, you know? You know, I'm so convinced. I've lived so much of my life on managing others and trying to control things and trying to see ahead and protect myself. The one thing they say we can't do in AA, manage our own lives. You know, I spent years before coming to AA trying to manage things and control things and sort of like, you know, cut the edges and figure out how to do things right so I would get where I want to go. And probably for 20 or 25 years, and maybe still now, trying to do the same thing to sort of like control things and do everything by my wits, only to wind up in the dumper, and only to finally come to the final conclusion. And I still didn't understand why, is if I just give up and take my hands off of it and let God control the whole deal and submit myself to other people that are smarter than me and just listen and follow directions. And that's what we talked about last time. Become submissive and obedient. Words that you know, alcoholics just love to talk about, you know, right? Because our chief characteristic is defiance. We talked about that last week. If I just do that, everything works out great. And it's not a matter of brain power. It's not about being smart. It's not a matter of being just knowing what to do. It's just a matter of letting go, which is so hard for alcoholics. We're so scared and everything like that. So I want to talk, you know, I am going to talk a little bit. There's a reason why I talk about the third step. There's a reason why I talk about God. And I'm gonna do, since we're on step six, I'm going to do a little bit of a review. And but I'm going to ask this question. It's a little question. You know, maybe that's true. It's probably true of me. I'm sure it's true of me. Maybe every meeting, every step meeting I do, maybe what ends up happening is I spend 50 minutes, 40 minutes, whatever it is. I think they run in this group about 45 minutes. Maybe that's true. Maybe I spend 30, 40 minutes talking about the third step in every meeting I do, and 5 minutes talking about the actual step. Maybe that's true. So, well, the good news is if that's what I do, I mean, you know, maybe you hear me once a year, one time, you know, like, so if I'm the only one who does that, it ain't going to kill you. Ain't no big deal. How's it going to harm you, you know? But here's my suggestion. I'm thinking that maybe there's a reason for that. You know, maybe the third step really has to do with every single step. Maybe to the extent you do the third step, understand the third step, and turn your life and will over to God, has everything to do with the first step, the second step, the third step, the fourth step, the fifth step, the sixth step. Maybe every step in the deal has to do with the quality of your decision and your action and turning yourself over. Maybe that's scriptural. Maybe that's even not only my opinion. Maybe that's in the big book somewhere, buried somewhere in there in the big book. We're in the 12 and 12. Maybe this entire thing, with all the psychology about it and everything, maybe the whole deal, when it comes to the very end of the deal, when you get to the guy with the 60, 70 years who has the sobriety you wish you had, or some guy, whoever, maybe it all comes down to the fact that he's just the guy who was somehow able to turn his life and will over to the care of God and grow in the image and likeness of his Creator and want that stuff. Maybe that's what the whole entire thing is about. Maybe that we so much don't want to go there that we sort of have to sashay up to it, vector in on it, as every step, you know, pushes us more and more to that place where we don't want to go. You know, in Chapter to the Agnostics, it says, we have a chapter to the agnostics. I hear New York might be doing a pamphlet for atheists, you know what I mean, or something. Well, we already have a pamphlet. It's called Chapter to the Agnostics. You know what it says? It says, you need to get over it. You know, that kind of thinking, you need to get over it, okay? You know, it sort of gently sort of guides us, but maybe all these steps push us to that to a greater real understanding of this third step and what it means to us in our life. Maybe that's what the sixth step is all about. Maybe that's what the seventh step is all about. Maybe that's the, you know, I sit down you know, I'm a Jewish kid from New York, and, you know, you all know the story. I go to church. I read the Bible. I'm a deacon in a Presbyterian church. I mean, I've gone through a lot of changes since coming to AA. You can expect stuff like that's going to happen if you're going to grow spiritually. You're not necessarily going my direction, you know, but you go in whatever your direction. But, you know, I met my current sponsor now, who's got 55 years. He's in the audience. And we would go out and eat dinner. And wherever we are, doesn't matter where we are, doesn't matter what restaurant we are, restaurant tonight, we always pray before dinner. Now, I've got to tell you, I'm like one of these guys, I like food. You can tell by looking at me. I'm not going to dive into that food, you know what I mean? And many times I'll start eating, and somebody said, I say, oh, that's right, I'm sorry, and I have to be reminded. And sometimes I don't have to be reminded, but my sponsor never has to be reminded. And he always has this cute thing he says. He says, this is what he says. He said, after we pray, he's like 83 years old. After we pray, he says, okay, now you can eat. He says, the food will taste better. Because it has that secret ingredient.
Nice.
Because he has that secret. You see, college graduates don't know about the secret ingredient.
Yeah.
See, they don't teach you about the secret ingredient in grad school. You know, your guy's over where you work, and they're not going to teach you about the secret ingredient. A guy I met in Bible study who's got 55 years of sobriety, he's talking about the secret ingredient that makes the food taste better. And I wanted to have what he had, you know, so I started praying like he does. It's not something that comes natural to me. It's something I do because he does, because I submit myself to him. You know, that's maybe all part of the sixth step, and it's all part of really, you know, because, you know, the great thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is when all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done. You understand that with alcoholics? You know, alcoholics say things. We just say shit, you know? I'll pay you back next Tuesday, you know? Whatever, you know? We say stuff, you know? And the truth of the matter is, you can talk all about God. You can talk all about the sixth step, the seventh. You can talk about that. But how do you know you're really about that deal? How do you know? Well, you can tell in the fruits. You can see how a person acts and how he talks and what he believes and all that sort of stuff. You can tell by who he hangs out with. You can tell by what his whole life is about. You can tell basically about by what you're doing, how you're living, where you spend your time. You can tell that sort of like by that deal. Well, so what I want to do is I want to read a few things. Now, here's, you know, yeah, I'm saying it's about the third step, or maybe it's about the third step, or God, or something like that. You know, I told you the story about the guy who walked out of the meeting, the young kid, newcomer. And he said, you're Russell. I said, yeah. And he says, you know, my sponsor says you're a good speaker. I had to listen to you. He says, but you talk too much about God. So, yeah, that happened today. That happened even with Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson, as you know, back if you read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, then you know how we are. You know, if you're an alcoholic, what does it say in the 12 and 12? Right here, it says, we start learning about ourselves after we come in here and, you know, our real problems. And it says in the 12 and 12, we know that little good can come, and you know why I like reading the material? You know, you may argue with my opinion, and I may be wrong, but this is our basic text. I read from the books. I have a lot of people that come up and they say they disagree with me about something. I say, well, you're not disagreeing with me. You're disagreeing with the book Alcoholics Anonymous, because what I just read you came right out of the book. That's not my statement. You just don't like me because I'm reading it. Don't kill the messenger. Just be honest with yourself. You don't want to do AA. You don't have to do AA. You don't have to do AA. You don't have to do AA at all. But when you drink, or when you drug, or when you slip, or when you even stay sober but you're miserable, please don't tell somebody that AA doesn't work because you've been doing it and it doesn't work because you're miserable. Tell them that AA probably works fine, but you've never actually done it because you didn't want to do it, because you weren't willing to do it, because you were defiant. At least be honest with yourself about what's going on. We know that little good can come to any alcoholic who joins AA unless he has first accepted his devastating weakness and all its consequences. Until he so humbles himself, his sobriety, if any, will be precarious. Of true happiness, he will find none at all. And what I understand about my devastating weakness, because I understand that the drinking is but a symptom of my disease. Men and women drink and say, like the effect produced by alcohol. We're restless, irritable, and discontent unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. I understand that we call it alcoholism, but we really name it after the cure. Our best cure for alcoholism was, I need a drink. You know, I didn't really experienced drunk a lot. Drunk and an alcoholic looks the same as drunk and anybody else, but I experienced drunk a lot because I used booze to cure what was really ailing me, which was an inability to live life for any appreciable time without drinking. And the problem is when you really start experiencing alcoholism is when you stop drinking. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning and your life is caving in and everybody looks like a worthless piece of shit and why call anybody because nobody understands and you're lonely and all that crap that happens at 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, whatever the hell it is, and you say, what's wrong with me? I don't understand because I'm not drinking. Because you're not drinking, it's not the alcohol, it's something called alcoholism. And that's why we continue to go to meetings. That's why after 30 years I still go to meetings and do what I have to do. Because I have a chronic progressive disease that centers in my mind, not my body. You know, and my thoughts just sort of produce toxic waste, and that's just the way it is. So one of the problems that I learned I had, and you know, the problem is it's like everything else in denial. I don't want to admit this stuff. It's like embarrassing. I don't want to admit this stuff. One of the problems I have is if you're an alcoholic, you're probably an acceptaholic, which means you can't stand being rejected. You want everybody to love you all the time. It's all this unhealthy dependency on other people, places, and things to make you okay because you're not okay by yourself. No self-esteem whatsoever. What do they say? An alcoholic is an egomaniac with inferiority. I was talking today at the dinner about how I used to drive I used to have a new car all the time. I said, I am so excited about the fact that I drive a 2001. I mean, it's a Mercedes, a nice car. It probably looks nice, but I'm so excited about the fact that I drive a 9-year-old car. I want to keep it until it's 20 years old. Okay, I'm sorry. Because there was a time I couldn't drive a car that was more than a year old. Worse than that, if I had a car and it had a ding in it, and it cost $1,000 to get the ding fixed, I had to get it fixed. I couldn't stand driving a car that didn't look good. I couldn't stand because I was all about, it was for me, who I was, what I was, and how I feel was all about how I looked and what you thought about me. Whatever that thing is a human being has inside them so that he can feel okay, all right, by himself, I did not have. With me, it was all about superficial stuff. It was all about what you thought about me, and therefore, I'm always worried about what you're thinking about me. You imagine living in a world where you're always worried about what other people think about you and how you look and, you know, how people are perceiving you. I mean, I spend more money, you know, I spend more money that I didn't have, buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't like, you can possibly imagine. And let me tell you something. When you spend more money than you make, you go into something called debt. I learned that when I had 9 years, with a doctorate and all, you know, and you learn that stuff. So I want to read some things from Alcoholics Anonymous, and it may sound like I'm talking, and so since everybody has this rejectaholism, this acceptaholism, we want to be liked sort of thing, Bill Wilson had it. When he first started the program that saved his life, Towns Hospital, the creator appeared to him in the hospital. He's the one who said, you know, my Lord has been so wonderful to me, you know, curing me of this terrible disease that I got to keep on talking about it and telling other people. He's talking about the Lord. He's talking about the Bible. He's talking about everything. That's all they use. He's going crazy until one guy or two guys said, we don't want to hear that crap. And then the only thing that ever worked for him in his entire life, the thing that got him sober, the only thing that worked for him, as soon as two guys in AA said, I don't want to hear that crap, he was throwing God under the bus. He was ready to throw God under the bus. You think this kid is the first guy who ever said in AA, you talk too much about God? You're going to hear that all over AA. And so Bill Wilson, in Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timer, goes up to Henrietta Seibelin on page 159. This is right after the spiritual experience, and he says the following. In the early days, she recalled, Bill said to me, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. Now, why do you think he said that? This is the guy who was bragging about how God had saved him. This is the guy who Ebby came to him talking about a simple religious idea. This is the guy who saw a white light in a room, and the doc said, you know, hold on to it. Why do you think he said, I don't think we should talk too much about religion or God? You know why he said it. Somebody laughed at him. You know how it is because you know how you feel when somebody criticizes you. You just fold up like a wet newspaper in the rain. You know, you can't handle it. In the early days, she recalled, Bill said to me, Henrietta, I don't think we should talk so much about religion or God. I said to him, well, we're not out to please alcoholics. Listen, if you're going to be worried about what alcoholics think about you, you're going to have a lot of problems. And I understand because of the nature of this disease, for the first 15 years, you're going to worry about what they think about you. Maybe the first 20 years. If you're worried after 30 years, you got a real problem. Well, we're not, I mean, I figured out they can't kick me out. Well, we're not out to please the alcoholics. They have been pleasing themselves all these years. We are out to please God. And if you don't talk about what God does and your faith and your guidance, then you might as well be the Rotary Club or something like that, because God is your only source of power. Finally, he'd agree. He agreed. And that's why we have this book. That's why we have God written all of the steps. That's why we have chapters of the agnostics. That's why we said if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy would have saved us, we would have gotten better long ago. That's why we have this whole book. That's what the whole book is based upon. That's what the Arch of Freedom is based upon. It's all based upon the third step. So let me read some things from the book leading up to step six. And you tell me whether you see a pattern here. You tell me whether step six, because you know something? I don't know how to talk to you about any of these steps in my life, in your life, without talking seriously about your relationship with God. And I understand we got guys here on the first step and second step. Don't worry about it. You know, you're not, just throw this on the back burner. I don't know what I, just say, I don't understand. This will be the I don't understand crowd. You'll be the guys, if you're still around 7 years from now, you'll send me an email. Joe, who's that guy, Joe? You were right, you know. Okay. But for you guys that are sort of like on around five or six, or sort of toying with this idea, trying to figure out how important this deal is, let me read a few things to you. And then you can sort of see whether this has anything to do with step six or seven or any of the steps here, okay? Page 25. And this runs all the through from step one, before step one, all the way up to and melding into, like the Vulcan mind meld, melding into step six, okay? Because I think it fits like a glove. Same language, same stuff in every single step. Step three is embedded in it. Page 25. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence which we had not even dreamed. I hope you're in here for the rocket ride. I hope you're just not in here because you want to get 14 years sobriety so you can be hanging in there. How you doing? I'm hanging in there. I'm hanging in there one day at a time. Some days are good. How many people you sponsored? None. They just don't want what I have. You know? I don't understand that. Nobody. I can't find anybody to sponsor. We have found much of heaven, and we've been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less. The great fact is just this and nothing less. Meaning, the great fact, which is not only a fact, but it's great. Now, later on, they talk about the tremendous fact. Did you know that? And I've got a clue for you. The tremendous fact is the same as the great fact. So, if you're into facts, and you're into AA, you may want to know what the great fact is. This is the great fact, okay? The great fact is just this and nothing less, which means, by the way, it's nothing less. It's not sort of, kind of, it's nothing less than this fact. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. Doesn't say higher powers universe. They knew alcoholics got pissed at higher. Doesn't say the great grapefruits universe. It says God's universe. It uses the word a lot. The central fact of our lives today. What fact? Central. Not like it's off to the side somewhere. You know, what's the central fact of your life? You want a date? You want to get laid? You want a new car? You want money? What do you think about all the time? What's the central fact in your life that wasn't the central fact in their life? You want what they had? You got to start thinking the way they were thinking. You know, you want to think about cars and broads and guys and things and stuff like that. You're just not thinking the way they were thinking. If you think they were like you, they weren't in that respect. You got to read the book and understand who you're talking about. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty. They weren't sure. We're sort of guessing. We don't know. The absolute certainty that, I mean, they went over this stuff over and over. You don't think he understood the words they were saying? The absolute certainty that our creator, the great light bulb, you know, the prune tree, our creator, that comes right out of the Bible, because this is all they were reading before this. Our creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could not, which we could never do for ourselves. By the way, you know what the sixth step is about? It's about removing crap in us that keeps us from him and a better relationship with him, which he cannot do for ourselves. They're talking about the sixth step stuff even before you get to the first step. They're talking about it. Let's keep on going. We in turn set the same escape with all the desperation of drowning men. What seemed at first a flimsy reed has proved to be the loving and powerful hand of God. A new life has been given us, or if you prefer, a design for living that really works. If what we have learned and felt seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are children of a living creator. Children of a creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 43 personal experiences. Each individual, in the personal stories, describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. That's what this whole book is about. That's what all the stories are about. They're not about drunkologues. The drunkologue is there so you identify, but in the final analysis, what happened is how they established or started to establish their relationship with God. That's what the whole book is about. Turning on now. Keep on going. To we'll get up to how it works. Our description of the alcoholic. We read this at every meeting. The chapter of the agnostic and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. Here's the three pertinent ideas. One, we're alcoholic. Our description of the, by the way, our description of the alcoholic, what our problem was. The chapter of the agnostic, which says basically what? You got to get over that agnostic thing. And our personal adventures before and after make clear, here's the ideas. One, that we're alcoholic, we cannot manage our own lives. That we're alcoholic, we cannot manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he was sought. Being convinced, we're now at step three. Being convinced of that, that God could and would if he was sought. Later on it says, selfishness, then it goes on to what the real problem is. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of fellows that retaliate. So our troubles we think are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcohol is an extreme example of self-overrun riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must get rid of self. We must or it kills us. We must or it kills us. We must get rid of self or it kills us. Next line, God makes that possible. These guys apparently didn't get the memo. Nobody gave them the memo that we shouldn't talk so much about God. They didn't get the memo. We must or it kills us. Then it says this. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. Now, I want you to listen to what, I want you to remember this, because in about a few minutes from now, when I talk about step six, I want you to remember what they're saying here in step three. It says, this is the how, first of all, we had to quit. It didn't work. We had to quit playing God. Step six tells you how you're playing God and how not to play God. How do you know? Let me ask them. We say words. We had to quit playing God, right? You hear those words. Now, I'm not asking you to answer this. I want you to think about this. First of all, here's the first of it. You have to quit playing God. Now, here's the question. Don't answer it. Just think about it. What does that mean? Because if you don't know what it means, you can't do it or not do it. If you don't know what that means, as a matter of fact, you may be playing God right now in your life and not even know it. Did you know that? You may be playing God. You may be thinking you're doing a good AA program, thinking you're doing this, and playing God right now in your life and not even knowing it. You may see that in the sixth step later on. You may say, holy crap, I do that all the time. I'm playing God. I'm playing God. This is the how and why, but first of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided a year and a half to drum life, God was going to be our director. Who's the director?
God.
So God's the director. Okay, next. Okay. We decide here and after he's direct. God is going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his children. He is the father. He is the father. We are his children. This is the children, father, children thing again. Most good ideas are simple. And this is the concept. And this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. You don't get this, you don't pass to freedom. You don't get that new freedom and that new happiness that they talk about in the promises. That stuff doesn't happen to you if you don't get this deal. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer, being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and did his work well. Not your work, his work well. Some think his work is when he agrees with your work. His work well. He will have you, I'm gonna give you this hint, what I've learned in my life. He will have you reading books and hanging out with people and doing crap you don't want to do. He doesn't think like you. He will have you doing crap you don't want to do. Don't be surprised if somebody comes into your life that suggests that you do something and you think they're stupid. Don't be surprised if God's plan for you looks, listen, as a matter of fact, more than likely, you'll be able to tell God's plan for you because it'll look stupid. You'll say, that's stupid. I will never do that. Because you want to do what you want to do. I think that has something to do with playing God. Because that you're directing yourself. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed this work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life as we felt new power flow in. We enjoyed peace of mind. We discovered we faced life successfully, became conscious of his presence. We began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hair after we were reborn. Then it says, many of us said to our makers, we understood him, and then it talks about the third step. And it says the third step prayer. Now, get this. The third step comes, you ready? Before the sixth step. Which means, yes. Which means, there's a reason for that. There's a reason for this. Which means that it forms the basis of every step you're going to do after the third step is built upon, after the third step is built upon how well you're doing, how you're evolving in the third step. It's a necessary ingredient. It makes the food taste better. It makes the steps work better. It makes your whole life work better. It's all about that. So then they give you the third step prayer, and here's what they say right after the third step prayer. Now I want you to listen to this, what I'm about to say to you, and compare it to the six-step test. You know, there's a test. Did you know that there was a test laid out in the 12 and 12 for whether you're doing the sixth step or not? You know, the sixth step is the step that separates the men from the boys. Did you know that? You know, there's a great separation going on in here. You know, there's not only a separation between guys that have 20, 30, 40 years and people that keep on, there's a great separation here. The sixth step is, now every step really separates the men from the boys, but the sixth step definitely is a step that's the separation step. People start separating out. You know, there's the boys that have 9, 10, 15 years sober and are still using this as a dating service. Or the girls that are doing that. We're still looking for romance and all that other stuff. And then there's something else going on in here. There's another group of people that there's a whole other deal going on. They're moving in different directions. They're doing other things with their lives. You could spot them if you look for them. They're about as serious as a heart attack, but they don't take themselves seriously. But they take the program seriously, a little more seriously. They don't talk about idle chatter or crap or something. They're just into a different deal. You know, they take this stuff seriously. Here's what it says. It says, after the third step, now listen to this, we're going to talk about the six-step test. You want to know who the men are? The boys? You want to know who the women are and the girls? I'm going to give you the test. But before I give you the test, I'm going to read you the test right out of the book. It's not my test. I don't make the rules. You know, it's their test. But before I read you the test, this is on the third step. This is what it says. I want you to listen to this and then think about it when I talk about the test. We thought well before taking this step, the third step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Like, who are they talking about? I don't know who he is, but you better find it. You know, it says, see to it that your relationship, did you know later on in the vision for you, it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you. It doesn't even say stay sober. Doesn't even say work the steps. It doesn't even say get a sponsor. It doesn't say any of that stuff, which is all tools we use to get there. It says see to it that your relationship with him is right. It doesn't say see to it your relationship with your wife is right, or your girlfriend or other people in AA is right. It says see to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. So if you don't know who he is, or you don't have a relationship with him, or you don't care about whether your relationship is right, or you don't even know what right is or what wrong is, you're going to have a problem with this deal. And here it says, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we're ready. Ready to turn real, ready to at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. And utterly to him is not even abandoning yourself to him. It's like abandoning yourself utterly to him. It's like seriously giving in. It's like serious stuff, right? So then it goes on. Chapter 6. We're now up to chapter 6. So the fifth, you know, we did the fourth step now. We did the inventory. Why did we do that? So psychologically we can figure ourselves out so we can be smarter and we can understand ourselves. Well, the book tells us why we did that. Everything is about him. Everything is focused on him. He is the center of our lives. He is the center of their lives. The whole thing is about him. Here's what it says in chapter 6. Anything you might learn about yourself that might be helpful and more discerning about yourself, and more transparent, it might be helpful, but it's a byproduct of what we're really going at. What we're really going for is to increase our relationship with him. Here it goes. Having made our personal inventory, what shall we do about it? We have been, here's what they say. We're all the way in step 5 now. It says, we have been, now you may think you're just trying to stay sober. You may think you're just trying to do your fifth step or your fourth. This is what it tells you we're trying to do. We have been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator. Did you know that's what you were trying to do? That's what the book is all about. That's what they've been screaming at you. We've been trying to get a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and discover the obstacles in our path. That's what it's all about. Getting rid of the obstacles that block out the sunlight of the Spirit. You know, they talk about the sunlight of the Spirit, blocking that out. Then on page 75, right before they go into step 6, it says, what we do before, after we've taken step 5, it says, we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from, we thank God from the bottom. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God. These are like directions. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. If you don't know him at all, or you don't want to know him, or you can't thank him, or you don't have some sense of who he is and what he has to do with your life, how can you do this step? How can you even start to do this step? How can you do any of the steps? You know, listen, this is just my opinion based upon the stuff I read in the book. You do whatever you want to do. You find 15 guys that say to you, you don't need the God stuff, it's all crap. Or like Bill Wilson said, I don't think we should talk so much about God. That makes sense to you, do it. There'll be at least one guy you heard in your life in Alcoholics Anonymous that may sound like a zealous crazy guy, but he's saying this stuff. So later on, if it doesn't quite work for you, maybe you'll think back on this meeting and say, well, maybe that guy was right. I'll try it this way. I'll try it with the God thing. I'll start taking it seriously. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first 5 proposals, we ask if we have omitted anything. Omitted any of that stuff. For we are building an arch for which we will walk, for we are building an archway, remember the archway? Through which we will walk a free man at last. Remember what the archway is about? It's about not playing God. It's about he's the director. We're building that. Are we building it properly? Is that solid? You know, Dr. Bob said, if you're an atheist, agnostic, or have any other intellectual pride that keeps you from getting this program, I feel sorry for you. Your Heavenly Father will never let you down. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Are we trying to do it our way? Are we trying to water this thing down? The archway is going to fall. If we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step 6. We can look at step 6. Then we can look at step 6. I mean, do you think step 3 has anything to do with this? Think step 3 or your relationship with God or you're wanting to have a relationship with God. Do you think it has anything to do with your ability to do step 6? We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Are you now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable. Can he now take every one? This has nothing to do with you removing anything or you doing anything. Let's go to the 12 and 12. Let's go to the test. Step 6 in the 12 and 12. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. This is the step. So, you guys got a 12 and 12, get one. This is conference approved material. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. So declares a well-loved clergyman. Whoa! They didn't get the memo. We're spiritual. We're not religious. We don't talk to clergymen. Forget all that stuff in the book that says we encourage church membership. Forget that stuff in the family afterwards. It says the family would do well to join a congregation. They'll do well as long as they don't argue. Forget all that religion. Forget the stuff they talk about religion and clergymen and all. Forget the stuff where it says we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. We see that these people found the purpose. We used to dissect them and everything. Forget all that stuff. You go with your AA buddies who say, I don't want to hear about that God stuff. That's a bunch of crap. Because they got the program down. Forget about what they say in the 12 and 12 in the big book. This ain't the program. The program is what these guys who are hanging around the A room smoking and talking about chicks say. The cool guys with the nice cars that don't have the dings in them. This is the step that separates the men from the boys. So declares a well-loved clergyman who happens to be one of A's greatest friends. He goes on to explain. Here's the test. I didn't make this test up. That any person capable of enough willingness and honesty to try repeatedly step 6 on all his faults without any reservations whatsoever, you ready? Has indeed come a long way spiritually and is therefore entitled to be called, you know what you're entitled to be called? Well, how are you supposed to turn your life over to him utterly, right? Here's what you're entitled to be called. Here's the test. A man who is sincerely trying to grow in the image and likeness of his own creator. So you can tell me that they're not talking about a deity, that they're talking about a doorknob, that God can be a doorknob. As long as you're willing to understand, if you want to twist these words to mean anything you think it means because you're scared of them and you don't want to do the program as it's written down, then just say, well, my God's a doorknob. But follow up at least and say to be consistent is that you were created by a doorknob. At least be consistent. You know, my God is, you know, like the tree. Okay, you were created by an elm, you know. Let's keep on going. So step 6, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character as A's way of stating the best possible attitude one can take in order to make a beginning of this lifetime job. An attitude, now here's the part where, and I'm going to finish this up, got about 3 minutes, I can do it. They talk about what our attitude should be. What are we shooting for? And it says, therefore it seems plain that a few of us can quickly or easily become ready to aim at spiritual and moral perfection. It's hard to aim at spiritual and moral perfection. What does that mean? I don't even know what perfection looks like. You know what perfection does? It scares me. How about you? I don't like perfect people. I want to shoot perfect people. I hate perfect people. I hate perfect people. You know, who do they think they are? They think they're perfect. You know, I don't like perfect people. I don't want to hang around perfect people. Worthless slugs, that's what I like. You know what I mean? That's why I like you guys. You know what I mean? No, really. No, I love you guys. I don't love you because you're perfect. I love you because you're crazy. Because you're nuts. Because you're imperfect. Because you're just like me. That's why I like hanging around you. I hate perfect people. I hate hanging around perfect people. Therefore, it seems plain that a few of us can quickly, readily become easy to aim at spiritual and moral perfection. Aim at it, it's impossible for me to hang out with it. I can't even look at it. Well, what kind of shot do I have on this deal? If the whole point is about trying to get morally and spiritually perfect, but to make sure that I don't hang around with anybody who is actually trying to get there. It seems that plain that few of us can quickly or readily become ready to aim at spiritual moral perfection. We want to settle for only as much perfection that will get us fine life. Isn't that what we want to do? I'm a lawyer. I know about settling. Let's settle the case. We don't have to go to trial. Let's just settle the case. I'll compromise. You know what I mean? I won't drink and I won't drug, you know, but I'll gamble. I won't drink or I won't drug, I won't gamble, but I'll cheat on my wife. I won't drink, I won't drunk, I won't gamble. I won't cheat on my wife, but I'll watch porn. I won't drink, I won't drug, I won't gamble, I won't cheat on my wife, I won't watch porn, but, you know, I'll gossip about people beyond their back. Let's settle, you know, so that I'm good enough, I'm not perfect, because nobody's perfect, you know what I mean? What did you, get off my back, you know, I'm fast 20 years. Let's just settle. And here's how we're going to settle. We're going to settle for almost as much perfection as will get us by in life, according to our various and sundry ideas, will get us by. So here's the deal. Who's setting the standard? Who's setting the standard of perfection in here? If that's the way it is. Well, I am. I'm playing God. I'm playing God, because that's not God's standard. You know what's God's standard? Perfect. Perfect. So the difference between the boys and the men, I hate to clue in on this, the difference between the boys and the men is the difference between striving for a self-determined objective, what you think perfection is, what you think is good enough, and for the perfect objective, which is of God. So if you don't think step three, or God, or relationship with God, or knowing who He, what He is, and what righteousness is, and what that all means, if you don't think it has anything to do with the sixth step, you don't understand what these people were talking about. Now, how do you figure that out? I haven't figured it out yet. I just hang around with God. Where did I meet John? In a Bible study. Does that mean you have to go to Bible study? No, that's where I met him. But I hang around guys. I hang around. What happened to you? Is the same thing that happened to you happened to me? For some of you, I got a sponsor. I hung around these people. They were 9 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years down the road. They talked differently. They acted differently. They behaved differently. They behaved differently. Did you find that what you wanted to do is you wanted to be like them? Is that what you found? Did you find you wanted to be like them? You wanted to be like your sponsor? You wanted to be like that guy or that gal you saw? What does it say? If you want what we have and you're willing to go to any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. Did you get a we together? Do you have a group of people in your life that seem a little farther down the road? They're not God. They're not perfect. But in your mind, they're setting a standard that isn't your standard. You know, they act differently than you. They talk differently than you. You wish you could have a little bit about what they have, even though you may not understand what they have. You're setting your sights on them. You're maybe going where they're going, to the meetings where they're going, where they're speaking, where they're talking. You're asking their advice on things. You know what I mean? So all of a sudden your eyes are off, and maybe they have a relationship with God. Maybe they have a stronger relationship with God. Maybe you don't know what God looks like, but it probably looks something close to what they think He is and what He's going on in their lives than what's going on in your life. Aren't you then all of a sudden you're not playing God anymore? It goes into the submission thing. All of a sudden you're setting your sights on somebody else that you think is closer, has a better relationship with God. And you're trying to be, you may not know what God looks like or what perfection looks like, but you know what John looks like. You know what Mary looks like. You know how she acts. You listen to what she says. All of a sudden, it's 20 years down the road, she's passed away, and you're her. And you're talking to other people. And that's how this thing works, this sixth step works, you know. But you have to have a desire. Isn't that about to say? It says you got to have an attitude where you see that. Where you don't want to be your own God. Where you don't want to set your own standards. Where you don't want to sit around and say, I'm going to do it my way. Where you are looking at other people. And you're looking at other stuff in this thing. And you're trying to move forward. Because you want to, no matter where you are, I'm that way. I've got almost 30 years. I'm still looking at men down the road ahead of me. Thank God there are men ahead of me that I can look at them and I can change. Because I got all sorts of defects and stuff still going on. You know, I could sit there and say, well, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm self-supporting through my own. I could do that list of all the great things that are going on in my life, the things I'm doing. But you want to know somehow, some way, when it comes right down to it, I always seem to start focusing in on things I'm not doing. On things I'm not doing. You know, and believe me, my sponsor has a way of letting me know. He has a way of letting me know, you know. So thank you very much for your attention.